Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Hey, good morning. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley. How are you, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives? Here we are. It's Thursday, and I'm livid, Riley. Livid.
What are you livid about?
For all the wrong reasons. I think my iPod had a heat stroke. What is that, man? You've got one, Kayla. Well, what the hell happened? I woke up. I'm not going to complain too much about this, but my iPod had some sort of heat stroke. It's working fine yesterday. We're getting along great. We're doing a little Miles thing. And I wake up this morning. I plug it in. The iPod comes up on the little screen on the iTunes, but it's empty, according to the iTunes, yet all the same amount of memory is taken up. It had a meltdown. Is it the humidity? Do I have to go bomb the Apple headquarters? What do I got to do?
It's okay. You just need to reset it, and it'll be fine.
I reset it twice now. I'm jonesing like a dope fiend.
What does it say? Mean? No on it when it doesn't play?
Yeah, that's what it says, Riley. I push play. The little guy comes on the screen and shrugs. Sorry. No music for you today.
What Miles did you listen to yesterday?
Well, I listened to a part of... I was downloading more Miles because I had a lot more Miles than I thought. Mm-hmm. So I listened to Milestones. I listened to the beginning of Sketches of Spain, which I like.
You mean Miles Davis, right?
Yeah.
Okay. As opposed to Miles Standish, as opposed to Miles. What is that? What does that mean when someone says Miles? Is there another reference?
You're just saying Miles.
Most people would know what that means, but thanks for clearing that up. No, I meant... I was listening to what, length? What does that mean? What is wrong? I have an iPod problem.
Distance.
Miles Davis. What does that even mean? You mean Miles Davis? No. I don't even... What is going on here? What's happened?
It's early yet. Don't worry about it.
The guy who drives me, his car got stolen yesterday, the Russian guy, and now he was there today, so I get in the car. And because of his limited English, there's a sense of drama to him that I find sort of entertaining, unfortunately. Like, poor guy gets his car stolen yesterday, right? So he rented a town car to drive today. Because he's got to keep working, so I said... I said, "Oh, so what's up with the other car? Is it stolen?" He goes, "It is gone forever." The forever thing was great. And then he said, "The police will not do anything. They will. They've just paperwork, and no one will look for the car. It's gone forever."
And it's probably like, wow. In a chop shop someplace.
And if I had the right music, if I had my iPod, I could have put a soundtrack behind that. You know, forever, and have that. You know. Is that a little loud, Chris? You want to turn that down? You just frighten some sheeple out there. Hey, so let's try to make me feel better. That's what today's about. Now, I don't know. I'm addicted to that damn iPod. You got this IV drip of music into your head. Now I don't have it in the morning. I was looking forward to listening to some more Miles Davis that I put into my iPod last night.
I told you, man, all blues, all blues.
You mean Miles Davis?
Yeah.
No, I didn't mean Miles Davis. What an idiot. All right, so oil prices rose to like $65. Miles Davis. You mean
yes.
Miles Davis? All right, oil prices rose to $65 a barrel. That is the highest ever. That's 40% higher than this time last year. Analysts say supply fears are unwarranted. But I guess apparently, Riley, the reason this is happening is that the refineries are all kicking it like the highest speed possible. It's drifting, draining. The resources that we have here in this country, you know, in terms of what we have stored up, because this is the time of year that everybody's driving, they're going on vacation, they're burning it up. But what I don't understand, Riley, is after all is said and done, you know, being, you know, against the war, there was some, you know, rationalization of some people, but you think the least that we could get is cheap oil. Where the hell's the cheap oil? Someone's making a fortune here. I got to assume it's Bush and his cronies are making a fortune off of this thing.
Well, I mean, the cheap oil and gas was back in the late 90s under Bill Clinton when we were paying about 75 cents a gallon as opposed to the $2.37 a gallon that we're paying now.
What the hell is going on? $2.37?
And that's average, by the way.
I don't even have a car here, you know. My wife's got the car out there and she's driving in L.A. It's got to be costing her, I mean me, a fortune to drive that car out there.
But you know what?
What?
What's interesting about this latest run-up in oil prices is that the analysts are blaming the consumer for it. What they're saying is, well, look, you know, the prices have been going up and up, but the demand has only dipped slightly, which says to the analysts that Americans are absorbing the price increases and therefore can absorb more. That's why it's continuing to go up. And by the way, demand in our good friend over in our good friend in China, all right, which is the other most oil-consuming nation in the world, their demand is also continuing to go up.
So they're just saying, so this has got nothing to do about, say, it's not has nothing to do with supply, it just has to do with demand. And they're saying, well, what the hell, let's make a fortune. Let's make even more money than we ever made before in our lives. Let's kick some more dough into the pockets of the Bush family, into the pockets of the Bush cronies. But I was under the impression that some of this stuff was going to level off. I cannot believe $2.37 a gallon. Some people have got to be going into debt every day just to drive their damn car to work. Like, if you need your car to work, oh, my God, it must be killing you. It must be taking a cut out of your livelihood like you can't even believe.
Well, they're talking about the possibility of a price increase to $70 a barrel.
Which would certainly push
the price over at
250?
The pump. No, probably close to three.
That is nuts. Imagine if you smoke cigarettes and drive to work. Oh, my God.
Don't do them at the same time. Trust me.
Dude, that's going to be that's like $50 a day for some people just to have a pack of butts and fill their gas up, fill their tank up with gas to drive their donuts to work or whatever.
Well, you know what? SUVs are now paying $50 to fill up their tanks. Some of them paying $60 to fill up their tanks.
I can't even believe that. And now it's and like this isn't bad enough. Like what's going on in Iraq? Are we staying? Are we going? Would somebody get some sort of talking points together here, or is it just the same old Republican crap where they just put out conflicting messages so no one knows the truth and I get exhausted? I mean, look at this Sunday. This is mixed messages this week alone in headlines. Sunday, Pentagon planning troop withdrawal. New York Times. Monday, Pentagon expects to send more troops, more Iraq troops. That's from the Associated Press. Wednesday, Pentagon. Nobody knows when troops can begin to withdraw from the Boston Globe. Today, early pullout unlikely in Iraq from the Washington Post. What the hell is going on? I'm spinning around. I'm getting exhausted.
They don't know. That's the
clearly
problem. They do not know, so they're spinning every conceivable story they possibly can to see which one works. It's like, you know, somebody throwing the proverbial thing against the wall and seeing what sticks.
Well, I think what they're trying to do is get together some publicity momentum around taking the troops out so they can, you know, build some goodwill among deluded people as we approach the midterm elections. But the reality of the situation in Iraq is conflicting with their need for a publicity campaign. It's the truth is impending is impeding on their propaganda, Riley.
Well, the problem that they have is that they tried through Condoleezza Rice to float this idea that, you know, the political situation is improving, it's getting better, they're getting close to the Constitution, getting close to the elections, and now the generals on the ground are saying, look, it doesn't matter if they do the Constitution on time. It doesn't matter if they do the elections on time. The fact of the matter is the insurgency is there. It's going to be there for a while longer. And as long as they don't have enough Iraqi troops, trained, competent Iraqi troops to try and, for example, do a little thing like sealing the border with Syria so the fighters don't get into the country, as long as that is not happening, you can forget about American troops leaving.
They don't have that number of troops. They haven't got barely any Iraqi troops. And they're saying now that the amount of time it's going to take to train an Iraqi army effectively could be, you know, decades.
Decades, but they're talking now about there's no possibility, according to this latest story that we got today, there's no possibility that any American troops are going to get out before next summer at the absolute earliest.
Yeah, and this is from a Washington unnamed official, quote, to start thinking about talking about what it's really going to be like in Iraq after the elections, that's their elections.
Yep.
I think the important point is there's not going to be a fundamental change, end quote. Cindy Sheehan, who is out there in Crawford, Texas, about 5 miles outside of the ranch with her big red, white, and blue bus that says Impeach Bush on it, is picking up some momentum. We're going to talk to her later in the show. Yesterday we tried to get in touch with her, but the weather was foreboding and horrible and rainy, and she wasn't feeling well, so hopefully we'll talk to her in a little while. So as you may know, more members of the groups Cindy Sherman helped start, Gold Star Families for Peace, have begun to pilgrimage to Crawford. That was starting yesterday. You got people from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Arkansas. All these people who have family members that they lost in Iraq. And now 38 Democratic House members are calling on Bush to meet with Sheehan. They are getting on board the Sheehan bus. They are not saying impeach Bush per se, but they are saying that they support Cindy Sheehan, and they have written a letter to Bush. Here's a little text from the letter, and like, you recognize a lot of these names who signed on. You got John Conyers, Maxine Waters, Corrine Brown, Dennis Kucinich. You got our friend Jerry Nadler. You got our friend
Elijah Cummings, yeah. Lloyd Doggett. I mean, a lot of people. And by the way, people like Doggett and Elijah Cummings, both of whom are African American, are not part of the radical wing of the Congressional Black Caucus. These are relatively conservative guys signing on.
Yeah, well, I'll share a little with you what that letter said that they wrote to President Bush in support of Cindy Sheehan. As I said, we're going to talk to Cindy Sheehan in just a little while. Miles, who? 16 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Oh, Franken, nothing to lose. Makes you laugh at the troubling news. Sometimes I wonder if he's hitting the booze. Oh, Franken,
king of the Jews.
Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Who's that, Miles?
Yes, Miles.
Miles Davis?
Hey, Miles Jefferson.
You know, I was listening to the Stones, Chris.
The Stones who?
The Rolling Stones.
Oh.
Rolling, yeah. Yeah. No, you should have, I was listening to the Stones. You're like, the Rolling Stones? No. not the Rolling Stones.
You know, I used to spend hours listening to this song in the they had a music listening room at NYU.
Yeah.
And when this song came out, it was my freshman year in college. And I used to sit and listen to this. There are only two songs on this album. It's called In a Silent Way.
Yeah.
And I would sit and listen to this because they're like about 25 minutes each.
That's Mark Riley. I'm Mark Maron. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. I listened to all of Love Supreme yesterday on my iPod before it melted down. Maybe that's why it melted down.
It just too much cold rain.
Yeah, it just blew its mind. The pod just was like, I can't handle it. This is too deep. And just shorted out.
Yeah, can you put the Pixies back on?
Yeah, please. No, I can handle that. So today is the... I will do the iNews in just a few minutes. I will also read some of the text of that letter that 38 Democrats came out in support of Cindy Sheehan as we move towards Cindy Sheehan later in the hour. I will also ask Riley now to tell me a story, because today is the 40th anniversary, is it not? The 40th,
the 40th anniversary
of the Watts riots in Los Angeles. I have really no recollection of them. What year? So 40.
1965.
So I was 1 year old.
Yes.
And so if I had a recollection of it, that would make me a genius.
You were a wee slip of a lad back then.
Yeah, how old were you? That must have been right.
I was like 13.
Okay. All
13,
right. 14 so
young
years man.
Old. Yeah. A 21-year-old young man by the name of Marquette Fry was suspected of drunken driving. He was stopped by Los Angeles police, and before you knew it, a crowd gathered. Next thing you know, a rock was thrown, and next thing you know, a few rocks were thrown. And for the next 6 days, that area of Los Angeles was on fire. When it was done, 34 people were killed. Over 1,000 people were injured. There were, I don't know how many hundred incidents of arson. Now, there had been disturbances the year before, in 1964, in Philadelphia and New York, actually right here in New York and Harlem.
Yeah.
But not on this scale. They called out the National Guard in this case. I mean, it was a complete... an utter mess, but it did galvanize Los Angeles' black community at the time, and it was only a few years later, 5 years later, that Los Angeles elected its first black mayor in the person of Tom Bradley.
Mm-hmm.
But what I remember about it was looking at the neighborhood on television and thinking to myself, wait a minute, that's the suburbs, man. What are they upset about? Why are they rioting? Because, you know, in the Northeast, we always had the impression that slums were vertical. Slums were bad apartment houses.
Big old buildings.
Big old buildings or two-family houses that were all ramshackle. We never thought that you would see a suburban ranch looking house, and those were the people that were doing
it. What could be going wrong there?
Yeah, exactly. But a lot was going on there.
Sure.
That, first of all, at that time, that was the only place black people were allowed to live in the city of Los Angeles. I mean, and when I say allowed to live, despite the fact that early in its history, a black woman owned a good chunk of the land that we now know as Los Angeles. At any rate, Lyndon Johnson sprung into action. The Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, it was during that same period of time. As a matter of fact, I think the Voting Rights Act was signed sometime later. But the one common thread in all of those riots was a beef between the black community and the police. There was always some element of a conflict between the citizens and the police.
I'm glad they solved that.
Oh, yeah. They fixed the deal all those years ago, too. Yeah.
I'm glad all that's been cleared up, man. You know, oh, boy. It still goes on. It still goes on.
Yeah.
And L.A.'s got the worst of that, I believe.
Yeah. I don't know if Sam Yorty was still the police chief back then. But, I mean, these guys were, they really cracked down, and they cracked a few heads in Los Angeles back then.
Well, let's before we bring Cindy Sheehan on later in the hour, this is some of the text of the letter that was put together by 38 Democratic House members, and they're calling on Bush to meet with Sheehan, who is waiting outside his ranch, about 5 miles outside the ranch, to have him explain himself to her. She lost her son, Casey, in Iraq. Here's some of the text of the letter. Quote, since the loss of her son, Ms. Sheehan and other families have been committed to helping family members of other soldiers who have been lost in Iraq. Ms. Sheehan, in fact, founded Gold Star Families for Peace, a support organization for families of fallen soldiers. For several days now, she has been waiting outside your ranch, hoping to meet with you about the loss of her son and the failure to discover weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Ms. Sheehan has indicated that she is planning to continue her vigil for the entirety of your vacation at your Crawford complex, if necessary. Given the recent tragic loss of American lives in Iraq and the many deaths and injuries American troops have sustained since the beginning of the war, we hope that you can appreciate why the family members believe it's so important that they exercise their rights as citizens to petition their government. We believe it would send an unfortunate message to other relatives and soldiers if grieving parents were arrested while exercising their constitutional rights, end quote. You know, Bush said a couple weeks ago, quote, we have to honor the sacrifices of the fallen by completing the mission. The families of the fallen can be assured that they died for a noble cause, end quote. Now, I'm shifting into my voice now, of course. And the members of the Gold Star Families for Peace believe differently, folks. They know that their loved ones lost their lives and are currently in harm's way serving in a war based on lies, and they want the troops home now. But from all indications, that doesn't look like it's going to happen. And will President Bush talk to Cindy Sheehan? I don't know. We'll talk to her in a little while, ask her what's unfolding out there, how many people have amassed with her. We'll do the iNews in a couple of minutes, and we're going to talk about Bin Laden. So stay with us. It's 27 past the hour. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Yeah, man. Morning Sedition. Air America Radio, I'm Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley.
Yo!
Good morning, how's everybody doing? We got Future Mark coming up. Hey, this Friday, that's tomorrow, my friends. Tomorrow, we will be broadcasting live from O'Neill's on West 64th Street in Manhattan. Comedian Mike Birbiglia will be there. I'm going to be with him all weekend at Gotham Comedy Club. You can go to GothamComedyClub.com if you want to check that out. Food critic Ed Levine is going to come and talk.
That's a pizza guy.
Going to talk pizza.
Yeah.
We'll have free coffee and we'll have some giveaways and stuff. You can come touch Riley, rub his stomach.
Oh, no, you don't.
Rub his stomach. Rub Pops Riley's stomach for good luck.
I only $5.
$5. Okay, so that went up. You know, why not make a little side business? At 6 to 9 tomorrow at O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. It's 35 past the hour. Hey, folks, sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, did I tell you we got Future Mark coming up? Did I tell you that? I want people to know that because that's generally a pretty funny little thing we do here. You know what I'm saying? Miles who? All right. So luckily, we have the iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank this baby up and feed it some headlines. From the New York Times, Pirro starts her race for Senate with attacks on Clinton. Pirro starts her race for Senate with attacks on Clinton. Translation, smear season begins with mismatched warm-up game. All right. From Associated Press, Army poised to miss 2005 recruiting goal. Army poised to miss 2005 recruiting goal. Translation, suicidal tendencies among teenagers decreases. From Associated Press, first tourist trip to the moon eyed for 2008. First tourist trip to the moon eyed for 2008. Translation there, Michael Jackson finally plans vacation.
Ooh.
There he goes. It's the new Neverland Ranch. Ooh. Up there on the moon. So I mentioned...
You forgot!
What did I forget? What did, am I doing something? Oh, wow, we need closure, man. That
yeah,
was wild.
Man, you need closure.
Man, change is bad. Change is bad.
You mentioned Pirro. Yeah. She froze up yesterday at that announcement.
What happened with that?
She lost her place, apparently. She was missing a page in her speech. She got to a certain point, and then she said... Where's page 10?
Oh, man.
And it didn't say a word for 32 seconds.
What a dummy. That's the kind of commentary you can hear Mike Riley give on New York One. That'll be yeah, right. On Tuesday. You're going to do debate analysis, right? It's the first mayoral debate next Tuesday?
Yes, next Tuesday at 8:30 Eastern.
That's going to be good, man. So where are we going now? What I want to talk about now is these polls that we've got coming out. This is very interesting because... In a CNN Gallup poll, this was taken Friday through Sunday last weekend, found that more than three quarters of those surveyed say they believe Osama bin Laden is planning a significant terrorist attack against the United States. And a majority, 53%, predict he will succeed. This is very weird things going on with polls, because like we got 61% of the people now being polled who are against the way George Bush is handling the war. And in this poll, a majority, 55%, say they believe U.S. forces are likely to kill or capture bin Laden, but that's down from 66% a year ago and 78%, you know, just after the September 11th attacks. What's going on here is people are resigning to that sort of sense of fear, that sort of sense of foreboding, that ominous possibility that we will be attacked, and they're sort of giving up hope that they'll catch this one guy, yet a lot of them, Americans, are still willing to say that the Iraq war was necessary. This was the guy that put together the attacks that killed those thousands of people here in this country, and yet they're sort of like, I guess we can't get that guy, but Iraq was the right thing to do. Where the hell did they get off?
Well, see, that's an interesting question just posed, Mark. Mm-hmm. Here's a man who is responsible for the murder of over 3,000 human beings inside the United States, and people are willing to write it off. Now, seven out of every eight people who were surveyed in this poll said it was important for bin Laden to be captured, but apparently they're out of step with their own leadership because the leadership doesn't seem to believe that it's all that important.
It's always been my assumption that they want to keep someone out there like that, a figurehead out there like that. They want to keep him out there to keep this fresh, to keep the fear fresh, to make sure that the enemy stays out there. Even without conflict, these guys are going to have a hard time maintaining the fear necessary to maintain control over the delusional people that you know, need to be led. And I think that this is part of that whole sort of new Cold War frame of thinking, whereas you have a never-ending enemy in a never-ending war, which enables people to be easily manipulated because of that fear.
Well, you know, 4 years ago you had George W. Bush saying, we want bin Laden dead or alive. Now we've got his Homeland Security Secretary, Michael Chertoff, 4 years later saying, it's a mistake to personalize this. This is not a one-man band or a one-man show. But what changed?
Right, but this was the guy, and they had a shot with him. They had a shot on him at Tora Bora, and they didn't take it. They, you know, they could have gotten this guy. The whole it almost stinks of suspicion. You know, who knows where the hell he is? He could be up there somewhere between Pakistan and Afghanistan. You know, and Musharraf in Pakistan is nervous to take any real action because he might get. You know, he's got to watch his own butt. Mm-hmm. You know, and our relationship with them is sort of, you know, tenuous in terms of what's really going on. It's one of those great mysteries where there's politics involved. There is something being overlooked. There is somebody not taking action that makes the whole thing, all the truth that we think we know, come into question around this thing.
Well, you know, there is a story that's circulating that the intelligence community in this country knew about Mohammed Atta and Al Qaeda's plans the year before September 11th, 2000.
Of course they do. I mean, I'm willing to admit that they were complicit through negligence. You know, but it was negligence on purpose to facilitate you know, what we see now, what's going on in the world. A democracy core study. All right, this is an interesting thing because terrorism is very important to the voters of this country, and feeling safe is very important. Mm-hmm. But just because the Bush president is eating it in the polls doesn't mean the Democrats are picking up the disillusioned. All right, a Democracy Corps study has some pretty troubling news for the Democratic Party. All right, Democrats are always baffled by the Republicans' ability to get voters to vote against their financial self-interest in light of moral issues or social issues or cultural issues or religious issues. All right, and we always wonder why. How does that happen? Because we think it's ridiculous, and I think it's ridiculous that there's concern over moral issues, which shouldn't even be a discussion, because most of that stuff is personal rights, I believe, and civil rights, all right? But people are scared, and people are stupid. The study is based on focus groups of rural voters in Wisconsin and Arkansas and disaffected supporters of President Bush in Colorado and Kentucky. Here's the good news for Democrats. All the groups express dissatisfaction with the direction of the country and with the leadership of the president and the GOP-controlled Congress. Here's the bad news. As powerful as that concern is over these issues, all right, over the real issues, gay marriage, abortion, the importance of traditional family unit, and the role of religion in public life, quickly just renders them, you know, useless, almost irrelevant in terms of electoral politics at the national level. They're more concerned about these cultural issues. They're more frightened of those cultural issues. So that doesn't mean that the Democrats automatically get these disenfranchised Republicans or borderline Republicans.
No, it doesn't. Unless they have a plan, Mark, they've got to go out and start showing these folks who are disaffected and disillusioned about the direction that the country's going in, precisely how these same people that are running the country violate these voters' morals. Well, because they do.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, I guess you're right. I mean, the interesting thing is that all we have, all the Democrats, I don't need to put myself in the weed, but you know where I stand. All the Democrats have, in terms of the focus of their core values, are some of the economic issues and how people should be treated and how people should, you know, get health care. These, you know, disenfranchised believe in some of the economic issues and viewpoints of the Democrats, and I think on health care as well. But they see the Democrats as weak on national security and on cultural and moral issues. They view Democrats as both inconsistent and hostile to traditional values. Now, I am hostile to traditional values. I will admit that I do not represent the Democratic Party.
But
in these polls, in these studies, in this analysis, most refer to Democrats as liberal on issues of morality, but some even go as far to label them immoral, morally bankrupt, and even anti-religious. The issue of personal morality and religion in this country is so ridiculously overblown in the sense that these are personal decisions. These are personal freedoms that should be protected and kept to yourself if necessary. They don't need to be institutionalized or politicized to maintain order in this country. Are we that backward? Do we need some sort of theocratic fascism to make people feel secure in this country in terms, does everything need to be the same so people can understand things? Do we need that kind of consistency? It's frightening to me that these are the issues, Riley.
Well, people don't have all the information that they need to have. On the one hand, they will say, you know, it is the liberal Democrats in Hollywood that put out this trash film and television, et cetera, you know, that are corrupting the morals of our kids, but they never really look deep enough to figure out exactly who profits. They don't see Rupert Murdoch as some liberal ogre, even though he controls a network that routinely, just like the others, purveys sex and all these things that they have a problem with. A lot of this stuff just doesn't get pointed out to people.
I think that's true, and I think the use of the word liberal is wrong. It's liberal in terms of what they're talking about. If you're going to refer to Democrats as liberal on issues of morality, why don't you just look at it as Democrats, you know, appreciating what democracy stands for, that people should have their own choice, should be able to make their own decisions and decide what they want to do with their belief system, what they want to do with their bodies, you know, and say what they want to say in a democratic world where these people think that, you know, you can't say that, you can't do that, you shouldn't be able to have that freedom. I mean, the real truth of the matter is many of these people that are using the word liberal in that way are anti-American. They're anti-democracy. They are anti what makes this system great because they're frightened and they need a type of order that provides them with a consistency on a social level that really resembles a type of fascism, a type of totalitarianism, a type of consistency that just denies the individual any rights.
Absolutely. I think what we're looking at is a situation where, look, I personally have no problem tolerating conservatives, tolerating right-wing people. I'm not always certain that the right wing has any tolerance whatsoever for us.
Yeah. Well, for me, anyway. I have found that, you know, what I'm seeing now, and certainly in the right-wing media and the way the right-wing handles things, is they want to do, they look at this as some sort of game. It's some sort of football game. They see themselves in the lead, and they will stop at nothing to win. You know, even in good cases, is Casey Sheehan, you know, they are starting to say things about her. Casey Sheehan, who's out there 5 miles outside of...
Cindy.
Casey's Cindy, the son. Cindy Sheehan, who's out there outside of Crawford, Texas, outside of Bush's ranch with her red, white, and blue bus that says impeach Bush, and she's waiting to talk to the president about the death of her son, and some of these right-wing idiots are starting to say, hey, I don't think Casey would have wanted this.
Yeah, that's insane.
Well, it's not only is it speaking for the dead, not only is it disrespectful, not only is it a misassumption, but it's politicizing a woman's dissent and pain around a real issue that should be important to people, and all they care about is stifling the voice of concerned Americans. You know, that's all they care about. And I find that it's shameful.
Well, now we got the Defense Department. We're going to talk about this later, too. We've got them doing an extravaganza whose end game is to stifle that same dissent.
Yeah, dude, the way they're framing that, the way the Pentagon. Well, let's not talk about it. That thing really pissed me off. We're going to come back with future Mark. So stay with us. It's 46 past the hour. Miles, who? Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Hey, it's 51 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're going to try in a few minutes, we're going to hopefully get Cindy Sheehan on the phone. We had a little trouble yesterday, but we're going to try and get her on the phone in a few minutes. So we got the Cliff Notes coming up.
Hey, man.
Sorry
to bother you, but Future Mark is on line one.
Great. I love that guy. Put him through. Hey, buddy.
What's up?
So, Future Mark, what's going on in 2050?
I'm about to go on stage, man. I got a gig.
Ah, cool. So I'm still doing stand-up in the future.
Hey, just a sec. I got to put my body armor on.
What?
Oh, man. Where's my shield?
Wait.
Crap. My gun's not even fully charged.
Whoa. Gun? Armor? Shield? What kind of stand-up are we doing here?
Well, comedy's gotten a little rougher in the future, Mark. Well, you know, actually a lot rougher.
Ladies and gentlemen, kill people and mutants.
Dude, they're shooting at you? How do you tell jokes like that?
Dude, stand-up isn't really about laughing anymore. It's pretty much a contact sport. Pure aggression, buddy. It's not bad, though. I get to shoot back.
You suck, air breather!
Dude, you kill people with the most vicious hecklers, man. Nice one, Gilboy. I don't come down to your hydrogen synthesis plant and knock the f*** out of your mouth. Come on, is that all you got?
Attention, we will now take a one-minute
Okay, so Dick Cheney III, what's up with that guy? Hey, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they found him grovel fluging with a Bronto dingle.
Dude, that killed. I didn't get it, but it killed.
Thanks, man. Hang on. Time's up.
You may now resume the comedy performance.
Ow! Does that hurt, man?
You have to let the mutants hit you, otherwise they get bored and you totally lose them. I've added a lot of injuries to my act just for them. Ah, nice one, Scratnazer. Is that your girlfriend, or did you harvest an organic-based replicant from the carbon barn?
Again, I don't get it, but it sounded like a really good reference, man.
Thanks, man. It all begins with the writing. I better wrap this up. Hey, you've been a great audience. Please form a line in the front of the stage.
Form a line? What are you doing that for?
My big closer, man. They each get to punch me in the nads. I always get positive comment cards afterwards, and everyone goes home happy. Oh! Just one.
Oh, my God, man. I am so sorry. Hey, but, dude, I hate to ask you this right now, but do you have any advice for me?
Dude. I've got like 50 life forms lined up here to punch me in the balls.
All right, I'm sorry. Good point. All right, I get it. All right, I'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, later, man.
Oh, man. man. Ooh. That was rough. Yeah, I hope it's not going to be like that at Gotham Comedy Club this Friday and Saturday. You can get information at GothamComedyClub.com. I'll be there with some other folks, some other funny peoples.
Uh-oh.
These are just, you know, these are the workout nights. So, you know, don't go in there expecting the big, you know, Marc Maron extravaganza. It's just me among, I'm just a worker among workers there on the weekends. Just me and about four other guys doing roughly the same amount of time trying to work some stuff out. Also, where are we at? We're going to, in a few minutes, hopefully, get Cindy Sheehan on the phone. Right now, I'd like to talk about this, Riley. Congress has extended daylight savings time by 4 weeks.
Yeah.
In 2007, our clocks will spring forward on the second Sunday of March and fall back on the first Sunday of November. I got to be honest with you. I never know when this is or what it means or how it happens. I just know that it's dark in the morning or it isn't. And apparently shifting this, making there more light in the afternoon, does not, in, or less light in the morning, it doesn't have the same effect. It seems like the extension of these dates is not going to help in a lot of ways.
No, it really doesn't cut down on energy consumption. It doesn't cut crime. It doesn't really cut down on auto fatalities. But I used to love it.
What was the angle on the auto fatalities? What was the angle on that?
I guess it's
less dark?
I guess people would, it doesn't get dark as early.
So they drive less? I had no idea. What were you going to say? I cut you off.
No. I mean, I remember thinking at one point during the 70s when it looked like they were going to extend it, make it year round.
Yeah.
That this was wonderful because I used to be a night person back then, and you know, it didn't matter to me whether it was dark early or dark late or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the longer it stayed dark, the better I liked it in the morning.
Maybe they should just turn it all around. You know, just shift the whole clock so everyone has to be on our schedule now. So everyone works in the middle of the night and daytime is
daytime
sleep time.
Is sleep
just
time,
a culture of vampires. It's already like that in some cities. But anyways, I have no idea the histrionics of daylight savings, that it's been around a long time, that the idea was actually proposed by a British architect in 1907, and the Germans were the first ones to try it in 1916, hoping it would help them conserve fuel during the First World War. You know, and then it moves on through history. In 1919, New York City was the only one that kept it going, and they passed local daylight savings ordinance in 1919, primarily to serve the powerful department stores, which wanted evening light to tempt working people to shop on their way home.
Yep.
So it's always been used, like, and even now, apparently, when they put this thing into action, the idea is that in 19, like the golf industry, like in 86 when they had daylight savings time, the golf industry boosted their $400 million came into that industry annually, and also the barbecue industry, $150 million came into that. 7-Eleven convenience stores, $50 million rise in sales when they first initiated the daylight savings time in the '80s.
The oil industry, do they need any more money?
Yeah, right.
Do they really need any more
Actually,
money?
It makes people drive more.
Yeah, it
because they got more daylight. They're like, yay, let's go party,
let's go to
all
the beach.
So coming up, we're gonna have Cliff Notes. We're gonna have Cindy Sheehan on the phone. Later in the show, one of the directors of Born in Brothels, which was a beautiful documentary, is going to be with us. It is 57 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition with Mark and Mark.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Six past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning's Edition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives. Good morning to you as well. As you know, we are going to be talking to Cindy Sheehan in a little while. I also my iPod's broken, but no big deal. It had a meltdown of some kind. I believe it was the Coltrane. That would be John Coltrane, my friend. I think the iPod just a little guy came up on the screen holding his head going, I can't deal, man. Too deep. What else is going on? Tomorrow, I want to say we got the Cliff Notes coming up. Also, we got some news on CBGB sitting right in front of me. I guess what we did worked. I'd like to do all the credit. Take all the credit. No, they've been fighting the fight. Let me talk about that in just a second. Tomorrow, join Morning's Edition this Friday. That's tomorrow when we broadcast live from O'Neill's on West 64th Street. West 64th Street in Manhattan. Comedian Mike Birbiglia will be there. Food critic Ed Levine will be there. We'll have free coffee. We'll have some giveaways. You know, Mark Riley will be there.
What?
Pops Riley, come up, rub his stomach, get good luck. He's going to be there. That's 6 to 9 at O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West, my friends.
Yeah, you know, Michael O'Neill, the guy that owns that place, has been in the forefront of the stop smoking movement in restaurants in this town.
Well, I'm not going to smoke. Maybe tomorrow's the day I should
Nobody
smoke.
Nobody can.
Hey, man.
Yeah, what?
Your stalker's on line one.
Oh, great. Uh-oh. Great. Okay, fine. What do you want? What's going on?
Hello, Mark.
Yes, hello. Yeah. What? What do you want?
Actually, I shouldn't have called just yet. I need to get coffee. Do you mind if I just call you back?
What is that? All right, fine. Call me back. What is that?
Okay, I'll call you back in a minute.
What is that?
A friendly stalker.
What is that? That's ridiculous.
Wow.
A Manhattan civil court judge ruled yesterday that the music mecca that we performed at last week,
CBGB's,
is not going to lose its lease. That what they told us was right. That they didn't owe this back rent. That they were being manipulated and maneuvered and finagled by the landlord. They are going to have to negotiate some sort of
a new lease,
but they don't have to leave.
Nope, they don't have to leave. And the decision seemed to suggest that the landlord was kind of not engaged in any out and out criminality for sure, but certainly said that there was some question of suspect accounting and whether or not they were intentionally orchestrating a scenario by which CBGBs would get tossed out of the space.
Okay, well, I got one or two emails from some dummies who listen to our show, and I mean this in the nice way, you know, the liberal dummies that I care about, who are like, why are you guys wasting time fighting for a rock club? Because that is part of what we're about. This can't all be about politics. Part of the freedom of expression, part of the history of what rock and roll music means, what poetry means, what freedom of expression and thought means, is important to me. It's important to what I consider my own personal liberal agenda. For those of you who are just tuning in, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Donald Rumsfeld announced a March on Washington and country music concert to celebrate the anniversary of September 11th. And like every Rumsfeld project, it'll be underfunded, poorly researched, and inadequately protected. Rumsfeld hopes this will become an annual event throughout the 500 or so years our troops will be in Iraq. A report says detainees at Guantanamo Bay love the Harry Potter books. When prisoners were told that people stood in line for over 24 hours to get the Harry Potter book the first day it came out, one of the prisoners said, quote, "That's what we have to do to get a copy, but we have to do it on one foot with a hood over our head and electrodes attached to our scrotum," end quote. As soon as guards realized prisoners at Guantanamo liked the new Harry Potter book, they began flushing it down toilets.
Okay.
But it kept magically floating back up.
Ooh.
A South Korean man has died after playing 50 straight hours of computer games. Over the three-day period, the man only left his spot to go to the toilet, take brief naps, and stare at his reflection in a mirror and wonder what the hell he was doing with his life. Just kidding. He didn't do that last thing. I made that up. You know what I'm saying, Caleb? Miles who? Miles Davis?
Miles Davis.
What do we got? Okay, let's do this, man. Oil prices are up to, what, $65 a barrel? The highest ever, Riley. The highest ever.
You know what's scary?
What?
They could go up again before the show's over.
We'll keep on that.
Yeah.
40% higher than this time last year. Okay, so a lot of analysts are saying that it's not, there's no reason to panic. What's going on is the refineries are working at max, all right? You know, whatever we have in stock now is not dwindling, but, you know, this is the time of year where people drive more. And the bottom line is that oil companies and cronies of the Bush crime family are making a fortune off of this. This is just something they decide based on demand. This is not always, a lot of people assume, like, we're running out, or they pay lip service to us running out of oil, which we probably will, given that the way we consume, and God forbid they figure out a way to do some other, you know, renewable energy resource or more efficient energy resource. But the bottom line is they're just ripping us off. They know that people will pay up to $3 a gallon for this stuff, so they're going to keep raising the prices. And I tell you who I feel bad for are the cats who've got drive for work. Independent contractors of whatever whatever their job is, if they need to use their car for work. I know as a comic, when I used to schlep around and do all those one-nighters, you drive 100, 200 miles a night at $3 a gallon. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine if you smoke cigarettes? Not that it's a good habit to have, but those things, what do those things cost now? $30?
In New York?
$30 a pack?
$7.50 a pack.
$7.50 a pack. You know, when I started smoking, when they got their hooks in me, it was like 55 cents a pack. At the
when I started, they were 30 cents a pack.
I had to go to the Husky gas station, which was one of those cheap gas stations down on Rio Grande Boulevard. But nonetheless, I feel bad for people. I mean, my wife is out there in L.A. driving around, going to her appointments and to her auditions in my car, spending $2.37 or whatever it is, a gallon of my money. I mean, her
no,
money
no,
on
it's
gas.
Higher out where you are.
I'm kidding.
In the L.A. area, you're talking about prices that will run up to, like $2.50 to $2.75, but what you have here, Mark, and it's weird the way this is working out. The analysts are saying that it's fear, that people are scared because there have been a rash of recent outages at oil refineries, not just here but in the Middle East as well, and that's what's driving up the price. But until consumers stop consuming, the price is going to continue to go up.
I just want to say that if my wife is listening, which she probably isn't because she's sleeping, baby, you can drive wherever you want. You understand?
Yeah, right.
It's the world is yours.
End
man.
Of the block. Go ahead.
I don't care. You know, we're
fun.
It's all going to come back around. You watch, man. She's going to get a job, a big writing job, or she's.
Let
gonna,
me tell you something. You're going to go to California, and she's going to have a Humvee in your driveway.
I think a Scion is what she's looking at, but a Humvee that would be sort of interesting.
I'll spend your money.
Did you ever look at one of those things and think that's a car you could drive? Did you ever think that?
Absolutely not.
I don't even understand what you would do with that. It's so
look at it.
It's so much car. What do you feel tempted to drive over people's houses?
Yeah.
Like, how could you not be in a Humvee and not feel tempted? Like, well, it's just a Honda. I'm going to drive over it.
Yeah. Or like in a parking space. Well, hey, I can bump this guy behind me. I can bump the guy in front of me. What difference does it make? I'm not going to get
horrible,
hurt.
Horrible, obnoxious military vehicle. Speaking about the military, if I could segue.
Uh-oh.
What a segue that was, my friends. Donald Rumsfeld, dig this in. This is heinous to me. This really pissed me off. The Pentagon, listen to me, the Pentagon is sponsoring a march on Washington and a country music concert to mark the fourth anniversary of 9/11. Tasteful, right? The Pentagon. Since when does the Pentagon sponsor a march on Washington? Excuse me, isn't that the dissent frame that they're trying to rip off now? Isn't a march on Washington automatically associated with people of a democratic nature coming together to ask for justice, to seek civil rights, to dissent in the way that they're allowed to in the Constitution and make a statement about democracy and about getting things done in this country for the people that live in it? And now the Pentagon is sponsoring a march? What the hell is that?
Well, I'll tell you what it is. It is a way to try and reestablish some contact with the very people we were talking about last hour, who were those rural, non-college white voters who have serious problems with the direction the country's in and serious problems with the way the Bush administration is handling the so-called war on terror.
Get the name. They can't even figure out a catchy name. The, quote, America Supports Your Freedom Walk, end
yeah.
quote. What the hell is that? It's just that way. And now they're doing it again, folks. They are doing it again, all right? Donald Rumsfeld said that the walk would remind people of, quote, the sacrifices of this generation and of each previous generation, end quote. Now, this is on the anniversary of 9/11. This is when, you know, a couple of thousand people, 3,000 almost, were killed, massacred right here in New York City. And that had nothing to do with Iraq. And this bastard is trying to connect the two again by stealing one of our frames, by stealing one of our actions, by stealing the frame of the peace march, of the march for civil rights. The Pentagon is sponsoring a march that's going to have a celebratory nature on the anniversary of 9/11 to remind people of, quote, the sacrifices of this generation. They're trying to connect 9/11 and Iraq again by stealing one of our frames. This is evil. This is some sick propaganda. This is some sick publicity campaign.
It is a sick publicity campaign, and you can bet Karl Rove is contacting his conservative church-going friends as we speak, to get a huge turnout, which, of course, C-SPAN and M will cover all day.
All right, well, let's see if my stalker calls back. I think Johnny K Street's going to come by. Cindy Sheehan, we had a little trouble getting her yesterday. We're going to find her today. Hopefully that'll come up a little later in the show. We're going to level off and get some consistency with that. We're hoping we can talk to her every day for as long as she's out there. It's 16 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
Just wake up.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
I've heard about those people.
On Air America Radio.
Thanks.
Past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Folks, tomorrow, Friday, come down to O'Neill's on West 64th Street in Manhattan. Comedian Mike Birbiglia and food critic Ed Levine, the pizza guy. Birbiglia is funny, too. It's worth coming down.
All right.
Ed Levine, the food guy. Maybe are we getting pizza
or what?
I don't know. We got to figure that out.
Yeah.
We'll be there. There's going to be coffee. We're going to have some giveaways. You can touch Pops Riley's head.
No, you won't.
All right. All right. 6 to 9 from that's at O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. And by the way, I will be at Gotham Comedy Club tonight, not tonight,
Friday
and Saturday. Come down, don't have lower your expectations and hang out if you want. It's not all about me. I'm going to do a set and then I'm going to, just a short set, just work out some new stuff. Also, Johnny K Street should be in momentarily
hey,
to
man.
Give us the what?
Sorry to bother you, but your stalker's back on
line one. Back on line one. Okay, all right, put him through. What do you want, stalker guy?
What do I want? I want to crawl inside your head and mash stuff around.
Oh, man.
I want to be the bird in your cage fluttering about, pecking at you. Peck, peck.
Like a canary or something? Like, you really need to work on your imagery, buddy. I mean, I think I've mentioned that to you.
I saw you at the movies, Mark. Broken Flowers.
Oh, great. Okay, so now you're following me in the movies. That's great. Great.
Yes, Mark, I am. I liked it. I love Bill Murray. He's funnier than you, Mark.
Okay. Thanks a lot, though. Thanks. Thanks,
Although, man. There were a lot of shots of Murray sitting out in front of the window, sort of similar to some of the shots in Lost in Translation. What do you think?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I thought Jeffrey Wright was great. I thought the relationship between Murray and Wright was pretty compelling. We should have been a little bit more of that.
I don't care what you think, Mark.
But you just asked me what I thought, dude.
Oh, I must have just done it to mess with you. So, are you going to the movies again anytime soon, Mark?
Well, if you're going to follow me there anyways, I guess you might as well know I'm thinking about seeing The Constant Gardener with Ray Fiennes.
I don't know. Not really feeling that one.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you'd like to suggest a different movie. I mean, I want you to enjoy stalking me. You know what I'm saying? So, go ahead, tell me.
I appreciate that, Mark. Yes. I'd kind of like to see Fantastic Four. I love Michael Chiklis.
Come on, man. That's like the worst movie ever made.
Yeah, but I have passes of buy one, get one free.
Okay, listen, cheapo. Live a little, all right? Look, do I have to pay for your ticket to get you to go to a better movie? Because I will. I'll do that.
That'd be really nice of you, Mark. But, you know, I'm still going to be your worst nightmare and stuff like that. And can we not see it in Times Square? It gets a little rowdy, and I hate that.
Whatever you want to do, discount stalker, all right? I want my life to suit your needs, my friend.
That's right, Mark. I'll call you with a time and where you can drop the ticket for me.
Okay, great. Perfect.
I'll be in touch, Mark.
Okay, pal.
I like that. Pal.
All right, then. Goodbye, all right?
If you're really good, Mark, I'll throw some goobers at the back of your head.
I think the stalker thing is starting to develop into something I'm uncomfortable with. It's starting. Am I wrong?
Just developing into something you're uncomfortable with? When were you comfortable?
Well, initially it was scary. I didn't know who the guy was, but now
you were flattered at first.
Well, now I feel like I'm going on a date. Am I going on a date with the stalker? Is that what's happening? I haven't figured that out yet. So let's talk about this, Riley. You brought this to my attention the other day in Brooklyn Federal Court Tuesday. Lawyers for the government said foreign citizens who change planes at airports. And this is a bad connection,
this
man.
Is rough, man. It's bad business.
People who are just making connecting flights at airports in the United States can legally be seized, detained without charges, deprived of access to a lawyer or the courts, and even denied basic necessities like food. Now, the story of this guy, this Canadian national, his name is Mahar Maher Arar. The dude is on a stopover. He's going to Canada. He was born in Syria.
Yes.
He gets pulled in as a suspected Al Qaeda member. They stick him in Brooklyn prison. They don't give him any. He won't allow him to call a lawyer. He doesn't get any food or water. He's held in Brooklyn. Then out of nowhere, they fly him back to Syria where he was born, and he's tortured.
That's right. This is renditioning at its absolute worst, and even worse than that, for those of you who think you're Americans, okay, and think that this country has certain things that we are supposed to stand for here. The government, our government, is going into court and arguing that once someone tries to change planes inside the United States, no matter where they're going, no matter where they come from, no matter what their nationality, they are asking for admission to the United States, and therefore can be detained outside the framework of the United States Constitution, even if they are detained inside the United States, as this man was.
It's like a free zone. Like this area where it's like a limbo where you have no constitutional rights. This is the first lawsuit that they've actually started to attack this extraordinary rendition process as to whether or not it is fundamentally, you know, fair, or obviously it isn't, but what human rights are actually being violated. It's a very interesting story. Because, you know, in the defense of the government, a lawyer for the government said anyone who presents a foreign passport at an American airport, even to make a connecting flight to another country, as Riley said, is seeking admission to the United States.
Yep.
And if the government decides that that passenger is inadmissible or an alien, he remains legally outside the United States and outside the reach of his constitution. Even if they are wrongly or illegally designated inadmissible, the government's papers say such aliens have at most a right against gross physical abuse. The lawyer said Mr. Arar was offered ample time.
5 days.
How is that ample time? I mean, I can barely get anything done in 5 days.
And by the way, they lied to his lawyer about where he was when he was in Syria.
All right, coming up, we've got Richard Cranium, editor of www.allspinzone.com, to talk about CNN's disastrous racist coverage of that girl who was supposedly killed in Aruba and what that means to culture. 27 past the hour, Johnny K Street coming up next.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hi.
Good morning, geniuses. Wake up, sheeple. It's morning's edition on Air America Radio. Hey, if you're in New York or in the New York area, come see us do this live tomorrow morning at O'Neill's on West 64th Street in Manhattan. Comedian Mike Birbiglia will be joining us. Food critic Ed Levine, the pizza guy, he's going to be there. We're going to be giving away coffee. I'll be there. Pops Riley will be there.
That's right.
6 to 9, that's tomorrow morning at O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. I will be noodling around at Gotham Comedy Club Friday and Saturday night if you want to come watch that. Always, you never know what's going to happen with the Mark Maron live performance. I don't mean to talk about myself in the third person, but, you know, sometimes you do. But I don't want to get your expectations up. That's what I'm saying. But if you want to come down and see me flail about and scream and yell, you can do that. That's GothamComedyClub.com if you're interested in that thing. So right now, I do want to say this. Johnny K Street will be here to give us some odds on what's going on in the world. You know how that works. So.
Yeah.
And also, we've got Cindy Sheehan is definitely going to be here in just a little while. I didn't want to deceive you earlier, and I'm not going to deceive you now.
Deceive everybody.
We will have her soon to talk about what's going on down there in Crawford and whether or not she's made any progress in getting a face-to-face discussion or talk with the president. She demands an explanation from him around the death of her son and this war that we are involved with based on lies. The whole country knows that Natalie Holloway is missing in Aruba. Everyone knows that. But how many of you are aware that a 24-year-old Philadelphia woman, Latoya Figueroa, is also missing, and she's 5 months pregnant? Of course, this shouldn't be some kind of competition, but why is it that the media is so consumed by Natalie Holloway and unconcerned with the disappearance of Latoya Figueroa? Why is that? We are joined on the phone from Philadelphia by someone who has been covering the Latoya Figueroa case, Richard Cranium, blogger with www.allspinzone.com. Richard, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Richard.
So now you wrote to Nancy Grace over there at CNN back in July to ask her to spend more time on the disappearance of LaToya Figueroa. And what was the impact of your letter?
I think the impact of my letter with Nancy Grace was probably minimal. What it did was kind of fire up some of the progressive blogs in the Philadelphia area and got a critical mass of attention going, I think is probably the best way to frame it. And what happened from that point is that CNN did finally pick up the story, and like the rest of the good packed journalists that they are, MSNBC, Fox picked it up, all the big networks picked it up, and all of a sudden we had a national story, which put some, I think, pressure on the local authorities here in Philadelphia to really get moving on the case.
Not only that, but I think that you facilitated them, actually covering and doing some, relatively balanced journalism on CNN, which is pretty big thing to have happen. Now, your name is Richard Blair, but you go by Richard Cranium on your website, which is www.allspinzone.com.
That's right. Have a nice little link right on the Air America website.
Oh yeah.
Well, sure. We like to link up to everybody we talk to. Certainly. Now let's talk about the Natalie Holloway case. Now you see this as being a trend, and obviously we all see this as being a trend on what CNN is willing to exploit and why. Why do you think it is?
Well, it's not just CNN. I read an AP story the other day where Greta Van Susteren's show over on Fox is experiencing its highest ratings ever, and they're all Natalie all the time over there. So it's not again, it's not just CNN, and I'm not just picking on Nancy Grace. I think there's a diversity issue that crosses media boundaries in both print and broadcast journalism, and if bringing LaToya Figueroa to light and kind of putting her picture next to Natalie Holloway has sparked anything, it's really sparked a discussion of diversity in coverage of these types of events, and I think in a larger sense, maybe even looking at, are these newsworthy? I mean, you guys talk about it all the time. You talk about the important stuff quite frequently. Are these stories truly, in a national sense, are they newsworthy?
Richard Blair, let's step back from this for a second. And look, historically, particularly here in New York, there was a time where if a crime was committed north of 96th Street in Manhattan, which would be Harlem, it did not get any coverage whatsoever. And, crimes south of 96th Street were the ones that got all that kind of coverage. And it seemed as though that was kind of the way the media worked. There's a quote in an article I'm looking at here that says, and this is from a USC professor of critical studies, a guy named Todd Boyd. In general, there is an assumption that crime is such a part of Black and Latino culture that these things happen all the time in many people's minds. It's regarded as being commonplace and not that big a deal. Do you think that that's an invalid statement, and how does that play into the coverage of LaToya Figueroa?
I think that's a very valid statement. We have our red lines, if you want to call it that. You use 92nd Street in New York. We have our red lines here in Philadelphia. I think that's a very valid statement that there's an overriding perception that that is part of the culture, when in actuality it's not part of the culture. But there's the view that it is part of the culture, so it's not news.
So, Richard, and there was also the component of this Aruba story that not only was this a white teenager with blonde hair, a woman, but there was actually the possibility that they were sort of capturing it on the initial newscast as if a gang of natives might have raped and killed her. And I was just curious, do you have any indication that the ratings dipped at all when they found out it might have been done by white people?
Actually, I think this particular case has certainly been sustaining a couple of shows, and over the course of the months, Nancy Grace and Greta in particular, when you take a look at, did the interest fall off? No, I think they're creating the narrative almost as they're going along.
Right,
it's like watching reality TV. Is a reality TV show is almost what it's become.
Richard Blair, why do you think it is that viewers are so... I mean, is this just, you know, people gathering around a crash site or something? Why are people so drawn to this kind of story? And this is not, you know, the Holloway story is not without precedent. Chandra Levy generated the same kind of coverage, Gary Condit notwithstanding. Why do you think it is that people are so drawn? Why do you think Greta Van Susteren has such big numbers because she's gone all Holloway all the time?
Well, I think the story, to some extent, Mark, it rings with everybody, and it doesn't matter what your race is. I mean, it's every parent's worst nightmare.
Exactly.
That their child goes missing, and I don't care if it's Latoya, I don't care if it's Natalie, or Chandra, or Jennifer Wilbanks, for that matter. It's every parent's nightmare that their kids go missing. I think the whole dynamic here is more based in what's appealing to the demographic of the viewers of a particular channel, of Fox, of CNN, what their demographic is. That's what they're going to cater to, because they're looking for ratings.
Yeah, absolutely. And like my stepmother, who is a Latino woman, she, like, anytime there is a missing child anywhere in this world and it's on television, she's riveted.
Right.
And the components of lurid and perverse sexuality, of rape, of violence, of all this stuff, it has all of the components that people sitting at home, people who may be, you know, watching Oprah, or people who may be spending their day at home just, you know, checking with the television occasionally, they just cannot take their eyes off it. But it is not news that it's sustainable for an entire day, and it obscures, you know, really important things that are going on in the world. I think did you call it emotional porn?
No, I don't think that. That's a fairly good phrase, but I can't take credit for that one, Mark.
It's a good one, because it ties in that there's an emotional porn factor, and there's also, you know, this culture is fascinated. It's almost a culture of necrophiliacs in a way, that they just want, they're fascinated by death, they're fascinated with the idea that they're going to prove how somebody died, and there's so many components to it that make it compelling. It's almost like I can't blame the people for watching it on some level.
Well, if both of these stories, if the Natalie story, if the Latoya story, have started a conversation, again, on, you know, just not whether it's newsworthy or not, but who's news and who decides who's news.
Exactly.
If it started that conversation, which I think it has, from what I've read over the past couple of weeks, we've kind of gotten that conversation started. Now we need to move that conversation a little bit forward, and I think that's going to happen.
Richard Blair, I know that there have been several efforts to get some of the news brass that make the decisions about this kind of coverage to comment on the record, and they have been generally hesitant to do so. What does that say to you? Are they just embarrassed? Do they have no good explanation for this, or what?
Well, I think we can go back and we can look at the Latoya coverage, and we can say, okay, well, did the networks use Latoya Figueroa's story as kind of a do-over or a makeup for a lot of the missing white women that have gotten covered over the years, and they've rightly received a lot of criticism for ignoring these kind of events in the minority communities. Why won't the executives comment? I found that kind of strange. MSNBC did Dateline NBC did a show on this on Friday night, and they couldn't get any executives to comment other than NBC's president of the news, of course. They couldn't get any commentary out of executives on why this kind of trend existed, and I think we've talked a little bit about that. You know, it's a diversity issue, it's a ratings issue, and it comes down to what catches a particular news producer or news editor's eye.
Okay, Richard Blair, I appreciate you sharing that with us. Maybe eventually they'll get to the point where they can actually do real news with the same emotional impact of these stories that are more compelling on a human level.
That's what we're all fighting for, Mark.
Well, I appreciate it. www.allspinzone is the website where you'll know Richard Blair as Richard Cranium. We'll talk to you again. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Richard.
All right.
You take care.
Take care.
It's 45 past the hour. We got Johnny K Street coming up next, and Cindy Sheehan will be here in a little while, I promise. So stay with us, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is former Labor Secretary Robert Reich. Remember me? I helped preside over the greatest economic expansion in our nation's history, creating over 20 million new jobs during Clinton years. I'm sorry to hear that the Bush administration has either outsourced or eliminated your job entirely. But while you're waiting for things to turn around, stay tuned to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Give me back.
Fifty past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly.
Hey,
what are we listening to now?
That's Wind and Fire.
Wind and Fire. Earth, Wind and Fire.
Wind and Fire.
Oh, would that be Earth, Wind and Fire?
No, just Wind and Fire. Earth left the building.
Oh, yeah, so funny. Hey, did I mention it's 51 past the hour? Did I mention that we're going to be tomorrow broadcasting live from O'Neill's on West 64th Street in Manhattan? Comedian Mike Birbiglia is going to be with us. Food critic Ed Levine. The pizza guy is going to be there. Free coffee. Giving away stuff. O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. Dig that. Cindy Sheehan will be here. I promise. I promise you. But right now, folks, right now there are a lot of big stories in the news this week, so it's time to get some bets down with our own Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny, where's the action, man?
It follows me, baby.
Uh-oh.
All right.
The action.
All right.
Or should I say non-action is all at Crawford Ranch.
Uh-huh.
You talk about calling someone's bluff. That's what Cindy Sheehan is doing right now. Bush is hiding in his bunkhouse or whatever he has down there in Texas.
Yeah.
And Cindy Sheehan is calling him out. It's like high noon.
Yeah.
The big bet this week is, will Bush leave his house to talk to Cindy Sheehan? In my opinion, that'll happen the day after Condoleezza Rice starts dating Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
It's going off at 10,000 to 1.
Put me down for a grand anyways. You never know. You never know,
hey,
Johnny.
You know, maybe Bush will develop a conscience. I'm down for a yard, Johnny.
Yeah, you're right. Who knows?
Yeah,
Bush might just have a soft spot for a mother who lost her son in Iraq, and John Bolton might win Employee of the Month at the UN. Anything is possible.
What else you got, dude?
All right. I just got back from D.C., and the buzz on the street is, where the heck is Dick Cheney?
That's right.
No one is saying where he is. And to tell you the truth, I hope he doesn't turn up for a while, because I'm taking Cheney action hand over fist.
Yeah, what do you got?
I got the inside line on this.
What do you
500 to 1 Cheney's in a lab at Disney.
No, I don't think so.
When they're done with him, I'll not only have a new heart, I'll be able to sing, play the banjo, and breathe fire.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He'll be able to do everything but tell the truth. By 2008, he should be able to fly. The GOP is pulling out all the stops because he might be running against the next president of the United States, Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Hey, Johnny, we know you're a big Hillary supporter and all, but are you in contact with her?
Riley, to get the answer to that question, which I know is on a lot of people's minds out there, you'll have to read my new book, You Bet My Life, the Johnny K Street story.
Now, what is this book coming out, dude?
I'm looking at a Christmas release. Let this whole Harry Potter thing die down.
Oh, you know what? Put me down for 500 on Cheney.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, the Cheney thing sounds good. I think he's dead, but I'm going to, you know, I'm going to put me down for it anyways. What's the long shot this week, buddy?
All right, three words, baby. Yeah. Bush's poll numbers.
Yeah.
They're not looking good.
No.
Bush is about as popular right now as Ellen DeGeneres at the Grand Ole Opry. Rumsfeld just announced they're going to have this 911 celebration to try and get Bush's numbers up again. Here's some other things they might try. Ready to make some money?
Yeah, hit me. Let's hear it.
All right. Bush is so desperate to cash in on 911 that he fills Ground Zero with water and sharks and jumps in on a motorcycle. But he doesn't really jump in himself. He has Condoleezza Rice do it. He just sits on the back holding on like a little girl.
Oh, yeah.
That's going off at 1,000 to 1.
I put me down for a scene now just for the image, Johnny. I appreciate it.
I'm going to have to go 5 on that, man.
All right. 500 to 1, Bush fights Saddam Hussein in a steel cage match on September 11th. But before they put Hussein in the cage, they starve him for a week and shoot him up with heroin.
Oh, man.
Bush pins him for the count, but it still takes a half hour.
Oh, all right, I'll take that for a C-note again.
Yeah, that sounds right to me, man.
Beautiful.
Johnny, you mentioned that Cindy Sheehan before. What do you think is going to happen if Bush doesn't talk to her?
Oh, you're reading my mind. That's right. My bet of the week.
Okay.
Bush gets so desperate to get rid of her that he sends Karl Rove out to set up a lawn chair right across from her and sunbathe every day wearing nothing but a leopard skin thong.
Oh, man.
Rove isn't going to yell at her, threaten her, or even talk to her. He's just going to lay there in a thong, reading Ann Coulter's book and listening to country music all day, rolling over on his stomach now and then. That's going off at 5,000 to 1.
Wow, man. Couldn't he just arrest her? I mean, that would be more humane, dude.
Fine. Killing me. If you want to double up, 10,000 to 1, Bush has Rumsfeld come out once a week and a Speedo to shave Rove's back and rub him down with baby oil. That would drive anyone off the property. That would drive you right out of the country. I'm out of here. I got to do an interview with Lake Show Magazine.
All right, man. See you later, take Johnny.
All right, man. Be cool, Johnny.
Easy. Wow. Some good images,
good,
man.
Good images and some good bets.
He's got quite an imagination, that Johnny K. Street. I will tell you that, man. So I was going to talk about this a little bit. This is a no-brainer here, literally.
Literally.
Motorcycle fatalities have risen sharply in Florida since the state repealed its mandatory helmet law. Mounting deaths means mounting health costs for injured bikers, and I think it means a little mounting health costs for all of us. The National Highway Traffic Association found in the 3 years following the repeal in 2000, 933 motorcyclists were killed. That's an 81% increase from the 515 killed from 1997 to 1999. The cost of hospital care for motorcycle injuries grew from $21 million to $44 million in 3 years after the repeal. And that is adjusted for inflation, my friend. Is this a burden to society because of rising medical costs? What do you think, Riley?
Of course it's a burden to society, and even worse, it sends the wrong signals to young motorcyclists, because even though the state still requires kids under 21 to ride with them, almost half of the deaths of kids under 21 are in situations where the kid isn't wearing a helmet. Mm-hmm. So what the message is, you don't need one.
My dad didn't even want me to be on a motorcycle. He was an orthopedic surgeon before whatever happened. And and he used to take me to see guys who wrecked on motorcycles to teach me a lesson.
Didn't really?
You want to ride a motorcycle? And he'd take me to see these guys in traction. It was effective. As many of you know, more members of the group, Cindy Sheehan, helped to start Gold Star Families for Peace, have begun the pilgrimage to Crawford, Texas yesterday. They're coming in from Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Arkansas. Now 38 Democratic House members are calling on Bush to meet with Cindy Sheehan, who is camped about 5 miles off of the Crawford compound down there with her bus, her red, white, and blue bus that says Impeach Bush on it. There's a growing number of people who are making the pilgrimage to support her in her vigil to get Bush to talk to her, to explain to her what the hell he thinks he's doing in this war based on lies that took her son Casey's life. You've got other groups rallying with her down there. You've got Veterans for Peace is down there. Military Families Speak Out is down in Crawford. Iraq Veterans Against the War, Code Pink, Crawford Peace House is involved. The country is rallying behind this courageous woman and her and its significant anti-war movement, certainly one of the biggest in my life. And we're going to be talking to Cindy Sheehan in just a few minutes, so stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Mornings Edition. It's 57 past the hour.
Mornings Edition.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's 6 past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Wake up, sheeple. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and, of course, you dirty lurking conservatives. How are you doing? Trying to listen and posit your talking points for the day into your head. What can you fight us on today? Why don't you take another shot at Cindy Sheehan, you spineless bastards? It's unbelievable what they are willing to do. I'll get into that in just a second. Join Morning Sedition. That's this show tomorrow, Friday, when we broadcast live from O'Neill's on West 64th Street in Manhattan. Comedian Mike Birbiglia and food critic Ed Levine will be there. We're going to have some fun. We have a little fun on these outings, if you don't mind. Would that be okay if we have a little fun? We'll have free coffee giveaways. That's this Friday from 6 to 9 at O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. I will be at Gotham Comedy Club if you want to hang out. If you have reasonable expectations, I'm just going to be doing some short sets. Not short, 20 minutes, but working out some new stuff. GothamComedyClub.com is where you can go for information on that Friday and Saturday. We are talking about Cindy Sheehan, who is down there outside of Crawford, Texas, outside of the compound that he likes to call a ranch. It has no animals on it. She is there with her red, white, and blue bus with the sign that says Impeach Bush. She is garnering support from people all around the country, all around the world. People are traveling to Crawford to stand with Cindy Sheehan. Meehan in her vigil to seek justice for the death of her son in Iraq, to get President Bush to explain to her why the troops are still there. These are people that have lost family members in the Iraq war and are demanding a withdrawal of troops, which doesn't look like it's going to happen, though they've been giving us mixed messages. You know, Sunday on the headlines of the New York Times, it said Pentagon planning troop withdrawal. Monday on the Associated Press, it said Pentagon expects to send more troops to Iraq. Wednesday, from the Boston Globe, Pentagon, nobody knows when troops can begin to withdraw. And today, early pullout unlikely in Iraq from the Washington Post. We got an official, an unnamed military official saying, quote, to start thinking about and talking about what is really going to be, what it's really going to be like in Iraq after the elections there. I think the important point is there's not going to be a fundamental change. So, end quote there. That means, Riley, that these guys aren't leaving soon.
No, they're not leaving soon. And folks, those of you who have friends and family over there, you might want to expect that whatever time they've been told they're going to be there, stretch that out by another couple of months, because they are going to send more troops as they ramp up toward the December elections in Iraq. We heard that yesterday, that they are actually talking about beefing up. I don't know whether they'll end up sending the 22,000 extra troops that they had there the last time when there were elections, when the U.S. troop strength swelled up to 160,000 from its current 138. I don't know if it's going to happen like that this time, but you're going to see more troops come, and the idea that Americans can pull out of Iraq with the level of training that the Iraqi security forces and police have is a cruel joke.
Yeah, I just think that what they're doing is they're trying to unsuccessfully create a propaganda campaign that will enable them to claim some success as they head into midterm elections. But the truth and the reality of the situation is ruining their propaganda campaign party. On the phone, as many of you know, Cindy Sheehan is on her sixth day in Crawford, Texas, waiting for the president to take a break from his 5-week vacation to come out and have a conversation with her about the war in Iraq. Cindy joins us live this morning. Good morning, Cindy. Are you feeling better?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good today.
Good morning.
So now this is your this is the sixth day there. What's been going on? We've got reports that a lot of people are flocking to Crawford to join you in your vigil. Is that happening?
Absolutely flocking to Crawford. It's just insane. I don't think Crawford has ever seen anything like this before. It's just so gratifying that they're coming from all over the country, Louisiana, California, Alabama, Oklahoma, Arizona. It's just amazing to me. People in the country are ready.
And now you've got to...
They're saying enough is enough. Let's get this guy out of here. Let's get our kids home.
That's absolutely right, and we're certainly grateful that you're doing it. Now you got 38 Democratic House members have written a letter on your behalf to Bush. You think that's going to have an impact?
Oh, you guys are funny.
You don't think so, huh?
No, I don't think so.
Did you actually get to see the motorcade go by as you anticipated the other day when they were on their way to some meeting or fundraiser? Is that yet to happen?
I think that's Condi and Don are coming today, but they'll probably come by helicopter. But it's either today or tomorrow he has his fundraiser, and he has to drive by us. And he goes out by helicopter all the time now, but we're not even letting him rest when he goes out. We had a big rally in Aurora yesterday where he was signing that energy bill, and we're not going to let up on him. We're going to keep the pressure on him, and we hope that we're doing something to maybe put a crimp in his vacation.
Mm-hmm. Cindy Sheehan, there are now the right-wing spin machine seems to be in full effect in terms of trying to discredit you. And I know you're out there in Crawford. You probably don't get a chance to see a lot of cable TV. But yeah. Now people are actually invoking the name of your son, saying that Casey wouldn't have wanted you to do what you're doing. How do you react when you hear something like that?
Well, number one, they didn't know Casey. You know, I knew Casey better than anybody else in the world. Casey didn't agree with this war. He thought that his commander-in-chief was misusing his troops, and he thought he was being used in a bad way, and I begged him not to go. I said, Casey, please don't go. And he said, Mom, I have to because it's my duty. Casey only went because he felt he had no alternative, you know, and for being an honorable man and being a man filled with courage and integrity, look where it got him, you know, and for these people to say, speak for my son is despicable. I don't recall them ever knowing Casey. I don't recall them coming to Casey's funeral. I don't think they've sobbed at his grave, so they can't say what Casey would say.
Now, they are also, trying to make insinuations that you're being used by the Democrats or being used by, you know, even, you know, someone like us who is engaging in your process. You don't feel that way, do you?
Well, I absolutely don't feel that way. You know, I was going to do this if it was just me.
Oh, good.
I was coming out here if it was just me. And you know what? These people are coming to support and help me, so maybe I'm using them. You know, they're all people who are dedicated to peace and justice, and I want the help of anybody who wants peace.
Yeah, I think it's a great. I'll be honest with you, Cindy. I think this is the most important political activism that I have seen in my conscious lifetime. I'm 41 years old.
I want to also let's make the war a nonpartisan issue.
You know,
because it is so wrong. It's been proven that it's wrong, and we need more people like Walter Jones that are going to, come out and say that I'm a Republican and I know this war is wrong because it doesn't matter what party you are.
Absolutely. Is there anything we can do to help? What do you need down there? Is there any way we can facilitate anything for you and the people down there?
Well, we're starting to be harassed and, you know, people were driving by all night going really fast and blaring their horns and everything. I don't know how anybody can help with that, but you know, I'm starting to worry for people's safety, and I don't want anybody to get hurt, you know, because of me. But, I don't know what else you guys can do. You guys are doing, Air America is doing an amazing thing for us and for peace.
So we're going, we can still
keep doing the same thing that you're doing.
Okay, we can still send people to www.gsfp.org. To get involved and somehow and see where you're at, and www.meetwithcindy.org as well. If people want to make the pilgrimage or get involved on a financial level, they can do that.
Well, Cindy, you're not being harassed by law enforcement at all, are you?
Well, they were harassing us a lot yesterday, you know, and I felt it was more than just, you know, just their call of duty. But,
right.
You know, they're not... They're just making things as difficult for us as possible.
Like how?
And, confining us to smaller space.
Mm.
You know, not letting one tire get onto the gravel or whatever. They're being very inflexible, and we're not impeding anybody's progress. We're not hurting anybody. We're not a threat to anybody. We're not a physical threat to anybody. But what's going on is we are definitely... a political threat to George Bush and his cronies, and that's why we're being harassed.
Cindy, are you seeing an increased police presence as more supporters come down there to be with you?
Yes, but I think that would probably be expected. But one of these days, and it's going to come soon, we keep doubling our support every day, so that's geometric. And one of these days, it's going to be too much for Crawford. They won't be able to handle what's going on here. You know, and we're very peaceful and we're not here to cause any trouble, but, you know, the Crawford infrastructure is just too much. But we're all is not enough. We're all in such good spirits and we just know we're doing the right thing. And we're not going to give up. It doesn't matter how much they harass us.
Any sense that you're going to get arrested, as we talked about the other day?
We were thinking we were going to get arrested last night when no media was there.
Mm-hmm.
But we were left alone last night, and we'll see what happens today because he has to come out of the ranch.
Oh, great. Well, we'll check in with you tomorrow to see how that goes.
Okay.
All right, Cindy. Thanks
Cindy.
Talking to you. Nice
That's
talking.
Great, guys. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Right,
thank
take
you.
Care.
That was Cindy Sheehan, who is down there outside the Crawford compound, waiting to confront George W. Bush. We are going to be checking in with her on a daily basis to see how things are going down there with her. When we come back here in just a second, Donald Rumsfeld and his Pentagon is sponsoring a march on Washington. What? 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
Twenty-two past the hour. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Coming up, we've got Ross Kaufman, co-director of the Oscar-winning documentary Born into Brothels. He's going to come into the studio and discuss the documentary, which will air on Cinemax on August 16th. And there's an art exhibition of the kids from the movie's work. I watched it yesterday, Riley. Profoundly impactful movie. And I also got word from down at corporate headquarters at Air America that you and I have to do another product placement minute. We'll get to that.
Oh, no, not that.
Yes,
again.
Yes, we do. As some of you may know, the new UN ambassador, John Bolton, had a false answer on a questionnaire for his confirmation hearing. He said he hadn't been questioned in a government investigation within the past 5 years, but the inspector general interviewed him in 2003 regarding Bush's claim that Iraq tried to buy uranium from Niger. This could well amount to perjury, my friends, and that comes on top of accusations that he politicized intelligence. It's an interesting story, but we're hoping to tweak it a little, give it something extra on today's Morning Sedition Slander Minute with our correspondent, Ted Fields. So, Ted, you're adding more to this story?
That's right, Mark. I have it on super-duper secret Infinity Times white magic background that John Bolton has not gotten recertified for first aid and CPR in 6 years.
Uh-oh.
That doesn't sound like a big deal to me. I mean, I don't know first aid either.
Yes, Mark, but you're not UN ambassador. Suppose John Bolton goes into the UN cafeteria and the ambassador from Brunei is choking on a hot pocket. What's John Bolton going to do?
Probably just let him die. I mean, this is John Bolton we're talking about.
I'll tell you what he'll do, Mark. He'll hop from one foot to another, panicking like a tremulous 18th century waif sold into a slave marriage on her 12th birthday.
You know, for an unsubstantiated rumor, Ted, this really isn't much. Don't you have any real slander?
I do have it on super doubled, super magneto mondo meglo misto background that John Bolton once bought himself a birthday cake, had it delivered to his table at a restaurant, and pretended to be surprised when it showed up.
That's not a story, Ted.
The man bought a 12-inch by 7-inch cake, wrote Happy Birthday Bolty on it, making up a nickname for himself that no one else uses. Then he sat down alone in the restaurant, and when they brought him the cake, he said quite loudly, "Darn it, I told no one to make a fuss." Then he took the cake home to his lonely apartment and stared at it with hate.
Ted, that's still not worse than the stories we've actually heard about John Bolton.
Well, I have it on super elastic aluminum pinpoint background that John Bolton is a lesbian.
Oh, keep working on it. All right? That's Ted Fields, our slander correspondent. He'll get
nice
edge on
work,
that.
Nice work.
So, look, I wanted to talk about this before we move on through some other stuff. The Pentagon is sponsoring a massive march on Washington. The Pentagon is sponsoring a march and country music concert to mark the fourth anniversary of the 9/11 terrorist attacks on this country. Now, there's a couple things wrong with that. Now, Rumsfeld is calling it, quote, "America supports your freedom walk." And he said that the walk would remind people of, quote, "the sacrifices of this generation, of each previous generation," end quote. Now, see, here's what there are two things that are wrong with this. Once again, they're trying to link 9/11 to Iraq, which is not a link that can be made because it doesn't exist. The link isn't there. Second, more importantly and more disturbing to me, they are taking a symbol of the left, a symbol of democratic dissent, a symbol of grassroots community organizing in this country. That is the march that we generally associate with a civil rights march, a march of dissent to change policy, to help people, and the Pentagon is co-opting the march on Washington. That disturbs me when they steal our symbols and try to reframe true actions of dissent and utilize them for their own needs.
Hey, look, if Sean Hannity wanted to do something like this, which I think he did try to do something, some American celebration last year or something, that's fine. He's a private citizen. This is being done under the auspices of the United States Department of Defense, folks. The Pentagon is sponsoring this thing. Clint Black, I don't know him. I don't know his music. I don't really care. But what I do find offensive is the idea, A, that they're using obvious civil rights imagery, and B, that this is all a stunt to try and convince the American people that we are still behind the war. Because I'm going to tell you what they're going to do, Marin. C-SPAN will cover this thing all day. Rove will get all his church people from all the mega churches across the country to come to it. And they'll have a huge gathering of people at the mall. And everybody will think, hey, we're all for the war.
What Orwellian nightmare are we living in where we have a march on Washington to support the war sponsored by the Pentagon? God, pinch me, man.
Hey.
I think I'm in hell. All right, dude. We got the product placement minute coming up in a second. We've got Ross Kaufman, one of the directors of Born into Brothels, a profoundly moving documentary. All that's coming up for you. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Thirty-four past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey,
it's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We got the product placement minute coming up. Sorry, Riley, we got to do it. You know,
oh,
Cliff
man.
Notes is coming up. But right now, before I introduce our guest, why don't I tell you this? We'll be at broadcasting live from O'Neill's Restaurant on West 64th Street in Manhattan. Comedian Mike Birbiglia will join us. Food critic Ed Levine. We'll talk about pizza, I believe.
Yeah,
he will be there. Big political show tomorrow. Birbiglia and pizza. All right, so we'll have free coffee. A big giveaway. That's tomorrow from 6 to 9 at O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. At this year's Academy Awards, Born into Brothels won the Oscar for Best Documentary Feature. The film story, the filmed story about children of prostitutes in Calcutta will air on Cinemax on Tuesday, August 16th. An exhibit of photographs taken by the kids, which is really the thrust of the documentary, is open now at the International Center of Photography in Manhattan. That is at 6th Avenue and 43rd Street. That's through August 20th. Ross Kaufman is the co-director along with Zana Risky of Born into Brothels. Ross is also creative consultant for the not-for-profit Kids with Cameras, inspired by the film, and he is with us today. Good morning, Ross.
Hello, hello.
It's good nice morning. To have you here. I'll tell you, man, you know, I didn't go see the movie when it was in the movies, all right? And it was because, you know why? I'll be honest with you. It was one of those things where it's like, wow, this can be heavy.
Yeah.
And I watched it yesterday, and though it was heavy, it was such an inspirational and deep, lovely story that I was sorry I didn't see it in the movie theater, and I really want people to watch it. Why don't you explain to our listeners, for those of them who haven't heard, what the movie is about?
Well, it's really about these little brats in Calcutta that we had the honor
nice.
To spend a long time with.
Yeah,
they're actually great kids. I love them. Eight or nine kids that a photographer named Zana Brisky ended up teaching photography to in the red light district. And Zana was taking pictures in the red light district herself, got to be friends with the women, got to be friends with the children.
That's why she went there initially,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she went there just to take her own photo. Actually, she just went there on a lark. Mm-hmm. Someone actually invited her to come to the red light district, a social worker, a friend of hers.
Okay.
She didn't even mean to go to take pictures of prostitutes. It wasn't something on her agenda. And she was just struck by this place. It was really just something that just came from her. And she ended up spending the next 2 years just trying to get access to the place. Finally, someone let her live in an actual brothel mm-hmm. for months at a time for about 2 years.
And I'll tell you, it's interesting about the film footage that I guess you captured. You were primarily working the camera?
You know, we were both working the cameras. We both did our own sound. It was just the two of us. We both directed the film. We both...
Yeah.
Shot it. I mean, it was really just Zana and I almost for 3 years.
The fascinating thing about India and about where you were shooting this is that these brothels are large buildings. They're filled with prostitutes. They're filled with the prostitutes' husbands, with the prostitutes' kids. There's all kinds of insanity. There's obviously, you know, abuse, verbal abuse. I didn't see much physical abuse in it, but there was certainly some physical abuse that talked about with the death of one of the kids' mothers. But because the colors in India are so stunning, you know, the entire film is just vibrating with color that I found, you know, what the fabrics they wear, the way they paint the walls and everything. So despite all of this horror that's going on and all of this painful stuff, you're still blown away by the way India looks.
Well, the first time I walked into the red light district, the amount of sexuality, sensuality, it's overwhelming.
Uh-huh.
And it's really, it just has an incredible energy.
Uh-huh.
How difficult was it to simultaneously try to make a film while at the same time trying to make a difference in the lives of these kids?
It was ridiculously hard. I don't recommend it to, you know, too many people, but, you know, Zanna would work 18, 20 hours a day just trying to deal with getting the kids into schools, getting their passports, getting their visas, getting ration cards. And also, we're both making a film. And it was just one of those things where we both supported each other. We both tried to help each other out every single day. And there were many days where, you know, she'd be crying at the end of the day, and or I'd be crying at the end of the day because something would happen. And we'd just both have to pick each other up.
Well, let's not do a disservice to the film here in saying that, like, what you're talking about now is that what Zanna did was she decided she was obviously, her heart was warmed by these kids who are living in this heinous environment. You know, even though their mothers may have loved them, they were still, you know, prostitutes, and there was a lot of insanity going on. It's a very destructive sort of environment. So Zanna decides to give these kids cameras and let them go out and shoot pictures. And some of the kids really took to it. All of them were excited about it. I had a moment when I'm watching where I'm like, it's amazing to me that none of the cameras got stolen.
Right.
But they all got into it, and it changed their lives to a certain degree. And this film unfolds this relationship between Zanna, the kids taking pictures, and then she decides that she wants to get these kids into schools, to get them out of this environment.
Exactly.
And it's so rare that somebody can actually do this. And she was able to do it for most of these kids through a tremendous amount of aggravation, getting them passports. And then one of the kids wins an international award for photography, and you don't know whether he's going to go to Amsterdam to do it. And you get very involved with this. But one of the things that you take away from the film is that, like, this document of her making a difference in these kids' lives is so inspirational that it makes you realize that you can make a difference.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, in the end, it's really about the kids, and it's really about them and their motivation to change, mm-hmm. and their motivation to learn. And it's about their spirit, and the kids were just incredible. And it was always about them and what they wanted, mm-hmm. and we were really just reacting to them.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to learn how to take pictures, so Zanna taught them photography. You know, they wanted to go to schools, they wanted to get out of the brothel, so we tried to help them, and what can you do? So it's really about the kids and their motivation, and it's really about the power of art to transform.
You know, now, is your background in photography also?
I was a film editor, documentary film editor, for about 10 long years. And as much as I loved it, I was aching to get out of the editing room. And,
really?
And then Zanna came to me with this idea of, she didn't know what kind of film it would be, if it would be 5-minute, 10-minute film. And finally, you know, I said no a number of times to her to do this project, and then finally she shot some footage, showed it to me, and I loved it. And I was in Calcutta very shortly thereafter.
You know, I've always wondered why more people that are involved in photography are not involved in filmmaking. You
right.
know, because they would seem to me to be complementary arts at a certain point.
Yeah, they are, and it was amazing how Zanna took to filmmaking so well. And it was incredible for me as a filmmaker watching a photographer work. Watching a real artist work and not worrying about story, not worrying about every single little thing, just being patient. And that's what she does. She's patient. She sits, she watches. And so they're very complementary skills.
I'll tell you, it was touch and go for me when I'm watching it, because you see all these kids and you're sitting there and you're watching it, and like any sort of documentary that's capturing kids that are against all odds, you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? Something horrible is going to happen to one of these kids. And, you know, I don't know if there were kids you were dealing with where it did, things horrible did happen outside of course, the loss of the one kid's mother and whatnot. But most of these kids seemed, anyways, at the end of the film, when she went back, yeah, a couple years later, it looks like, to be doing okay.
Yeah, I mean, we have stayed in touch with the kids. We're really trying to work with the kids. There's, I think five or six of the kids are now in schools and homes.
What about the genius kid? How's he doing? The photographic wizard.
Kid, Obajit, yeah.
Yeah, Obajit.
He's an amazing kid, very motivated, not only to change his life, but just to he really wanted to get out of Calcutta and come to America. And to that end, he's coming to America next week, and he's coming to school in America.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh,
talk about happy endings.
So he'll be here next week. And, you know, but, you know, he's not, you know, he has family there, and he'll always have ties to Calcutta.
Right.
But he really wanted to experience America. So
he's a
we
funny
finally
kid.
Got his visa last night or two nights ago, and we're very excited.
He's an edgy kid. You know, he's like, he's one of those kids you're like, wow, that guy, you know, if he can keep it together, he's going to do all right.
Hey, you know, he's got the ego to really do what he needs to do. And he's actually become a really amazing young gentleman, very caring, very compassionate.
Were these children stigmatized within their own environment? For example, here in New York, there were and continue to be questions about how homeless the children of homeless parents are stigmatized within a school system or within their own environment. Yeah. Are these kids stigmatized? And if so, how did they deal with it?
Well, I mean, the whole society, there's a stigmatization against the sex workers and their children from the whole society. And, you know, and they live in a very sort of enclosed, tight area. The
isolated
red light district is about 1 mile square. There's about 7,000 women there, you know, and maybe 20,000 kids. And it's a very isolated place. And they really can't go out of there. I would talk to men, basically in the local mafia, you know, and I became friends with them. They'd tell me, there's no way I can get out of here. I am stuck here for the rest of my life. So for the kids to finally get a place to go, a school, get out of there, you know, for Oji to come to America, it's really, I think, an incredible thing for them.
And it was difficult because it states that it was difficult to get them in a school in the film because they're stigmatized because their parents are criminals. That they're, even if they have a loving relationship,
exactly,
they're most of the women are on file as being criminals. Now, tell us about, before we can wrap up here, Ross. Yeah. I don't mean to rush you. Yeah. Let's talk about Kid with Cameras, the group that you sponsor now.
Absolutely. Xana started a nonprofit organization called Kids with Cameras. We've been selling the children's photography for the last 2 years over the website in exhibitions. We've raised over $200,000 through the sale of kids' photography. We're selling books and CDs and DVDs. It's becoming a little cottage industry. But more importantly, we're still working with the kids, and we're also trying to start a school in Calcutta.
That's amazing. So you can go to www.kids.com. So what is it? kids-with-cameras.org. You can check that out. You can go. Do you have another website that they can go to?
You can go to www.bornintobrothels.com. That's probably a little bit easier. And and check it out. And
the exhibit, if you're in New York, of the photographs, Kids with Cameras, is at the International Center of Photography on 6th Avenue and 43rd Street through August 20th. And the book is out as well. You can see that at the website. Yeah. It's a beautiful film.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming, Ross
Thanks
Kaufman.
For being here.
And what's that? And on Cinemax, it starts next week. That will air on Cinemax Tuesday, August 16th for the first time, and I'm sure many times after that. Ross Kaufman, again, great talking to you. We'll be back with the Product Placement Minute with Cliff Notes and with closing thoughts, of course, from Mark Reilly and myself. It's 45 past the hour, America Radio's Morning Sedition.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Reilly.
Is it possible for you to shut the fuck up for 10 seconds?
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, it's Land This Thing. It's Mark Maron here with Mark Reilly on Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. Look, we got the Cliff Notes coming up here in just a second, but right now, you know, we got another call from 6th Avenue saying our show has got to make more money or else the office can't afford notepads. So here's today's Product Placement Minute. Play the happy product placement music, would you, Kalo? So what's our product placement story today, Mark?
Well, the food crisis in Niger continues. UN Humanitarian Chief Jan Egeland said 2.5 million people in the West African nation desperately need food, including 800,000 malnourished children.
Yeah.
The hundreds of thousands of people could die soon.
God, that is the worst thing I've ever heard. By the way, Riley, what's that in your hand?
Oh, this? It's an AquaTrim shower massager. With the kind of hot weather we've had in New York City, I'm treating myself to a cool shower and a genuine aqua trim massage.
Well, I guess that explains your otherwise inexplicable nudity in the studio.
Oh, yeah. Niger was already one of the poorest countries in the world when it was hit by a plague of locusts last year. It then suffered a drought that lasted until early July. The result is a food shortage that threatens to wreck the nation.
Wow, that shower massage looks so relaxing.
I can feel the tension wash right out, Mark. And the AquaTrim scrubbing action lets my skin breathe freely. That's an essential requirement for naturally healthy skin.
It sure is, Riley. It sure is. Hey, buddy, be sure to scrub real good down there.
The United Nations... The United Nations is asking for $80 million to fight the crisis. As of Friday, they had picked up pledges or donations of $25.4 million.
Well, you know, I know a lot of people want to do what they can. So, for the benefit of our listeners, where can you find an AquaTrim shower massager?
Order it online at EpiladyUSA.com or ask for it at your local bedding and bathroom shops.
Thanks, Riley, for that very important story about the crisis in Niger. This has been our Product Placement Minute.
All right.
Who's going to hell for that one?
Is that soap or yellow cake? I can't tell. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. So, dude, let's talk about this tomorrow morning. We are going to be broadcasting live from O'Neill's Restaurant on West 64th Street in Manhattan.
Yep.
Comedian Mike Birbiglia will join us. Food critic Ed Levine will be there to discuss pizza. I'm sure we'll talk about a lot of different things. All your favorite guests will be there, our regular characters. We will be there from 6 to 9 at O'Neill's on 64th Street between Broadway and Central Park West. I, Mark Maron, will be performing at Gotham Comedy Club down on 22nd Street. If you want to go to that, go to GothamComedyClub.com to find out details. That's Friday and Saturday night. That'll be fun.
Oh, yeah.
And tomorrow on the show, as I said, comedian Mike Birbiglia, and also Lawton Smalls, Pendejo, Cardinal Milfington, the whole gang. That should be, you've eaten at O'Neill's before, have you?
I have eaten in O'Neill's once, yeah. Actually, a couple times I've eaten in O'Neill's. Nice spot.
Now, like, what kind of food is it? It's up by, where is it?
It's, like, it's up by Lincoln Center. It really caters to the people that go to Avery Fisher Hall, the New York City, not New York City, Metropolitan Opera. You know, people that are on their way into Lincoln Center events, that's a really, really popular watering hole.
Okay, well, as you know, we talked to Cindy Sheehan today. We're going to be checking with her throughout the week and for hopefully as long as she's going to be perched or posted or sitting or not sitting. What's the word I want? She is out
occupying.
There occupying a chunk of territory outside of the ranch in Crawford. Her and many, a growing number of people who are going to support her out there. You can definitely support her by going to gsfp.org, I believe it is. That is Gold Star Families for Peace, her organization. She's being joined out there by Veterans for Peace, by Military Families Speak Out, Iraq Veterans Against the War, Code Pink, Crawford Peace House, and people are traveling there, making the pilgrimage from around the country to be part of a very, very, very significant anti-war protest.
You know, part of the reason for this, Mark,
yeah,
is that we're seeing more and more places in the country. The other week it was Ohio. Now there have been a bunch of people that have been from the same regimental group, apparently, that have been lost from Pennsylvania. We're seeing different parts of the country being affected by this loss of life that's going on over in Iraq. And these different communities are starting to react with an increased sense of skepticism about exactly what we're doing there and about what their loved ones died for there.
Well, you see what's going on there, Riley, is that obviously, you know, we are not, there's a failing mission going on there, and there's a Pentagon and an administration that refuses to take responsibility, and they're waffling about the future of what's going on in Iraq. And clearly, the people who are out in Crawford with Cindy Sheehan are just sort of like, let's bring the troops home. Period.
Yeah, well, instead of getting answers from President Bush or anybody else for that matter, Don Rumsfeld decides to give a concert, decides to give a march on Washington. This is their answer to the American people about exactly what's going on in the war on terror, what's going on in Iraq, and we haven't even talked much lately about Afghanistan, where things are not going all that swimmingly either.
Yeah. For those of you who are just tuning in here, for our broadcast here at the end of it, here are a few highlights of what we talked about on the program. It's time for today's Morning Sedition Cliff Notes. Donald Rumsfeld announced a March on Washington and country music concert to celebrate the anniversary of September 11th. It's another Bush first, a march against our civil rights. The America Supports Your Freedom Walk will directly coincide with the America's taking away your ability to walk exploding Humvee caravans in Iraq. A report says detainees at Guantanamo Bay love the Harry Potter books. When prisoners were told that people stood in line for over 24 hours to get the Harry Potter book the first day it came out, one of the prisoners said, quote, "That's what we have to do to get a copy, but we have to do it on one foot with a hood over our head and electrodes attached to our scrotum," end quote. As soon as guards realized prisoners at Guantanamo liked the new Harry Potter book, they began flushing it down toilets. But it kept magically floating back up. A South Korean man has died after playing 50 straight hours of computer games. Some of the other online gamers at the cafe said, "We always wonder what happens when you get to the top level in that game." Oh, bummer. <let's go. laughs> Today's phrase just dropped into conversation. A 9/11 concert. That proves it. The only people who would be celebrating 9/11 are the people that used it as an excuse to launch an illegal war. Wake up, sheeple. It was all planned from the beginning. Now they're asking you to celebrate being screwed. Those are your Morning Sedition Cliff Notes for today. Tomorrow, O'Neill's up on 64th Street.
Yeah.
Be there. We'll have Mike Birbiglia. We'll have Ed
Levine.
The
pizza guy.
The pizza guy. And that Mark and Mark. That's me and him. Take it easy, Riley.
Have a good one, man. Good show. Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. On Air America Radio.